hotel rooms are a naturally creepy place.
Do not stay in that room.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of 13 O'Clock. How is everyone doing out there? I know that you can't answer me, but you know, I just thought I'd ask anyway.
Okay, so what do we have? What's this one going to be about?
Well, wait a minute. Before we get started, okay. let's give a shout out again to Project Entertainment Network, on which our audio version of the podcast is hosted. Go to their Patreon at patreon.com/projectentnet and give them a buck or two. They have some cool swag. And like I said, I think I mentioned it last week, but we have a new, like a special edition, like t-shirt that is going to be available in the Project Entertainment Network store. So if you like that design better than the ones that I did, then, well, I did this
one. You did that one too.
But you know, but yeah. The ones that are on our store, then you can go over there and get
it. They have an exclusive.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have an exclusive.
It's like a different logo one. It's pretty cool.
Right. It looks very cool.
Yeah. And then also, what was the other thing? Oh, you guys, I just, if you like our paranormal topics and stuff like that, I just finished my new Poltergeist book, The Unseen Hand. I just finished recording the audio version and everything.
Yeah.
So
this is going to be like a benchmark book in Poltergeist studies.
Yeah. It's like over a hundred cases, like 120 cases, something like that, like going way back to the first century. And just all the poltergeist cases you know and love are all in there, and they're all summarized.
And some of the ones that most of them never heard of.
Yeah, I tried to find some more obscure ones too. Like, you know, I couldn't put every single one in the world in there, obviously, because that book would be like, I would be dead before I would finish it.
And if you haven't read any of Jenny's books, they're awesome. It's not so much like the show. The show, we only have a couple days to research these topics. When she does a book, she spends months on it. They're really good.
Well, yeah, I obviously have a lot more time.
They're highly rated on Amazon. They sell well. But I think a lot of people that are into the paranormal are going to buy this book. This is kind of like that guy. Who was that guy back in the 60s who used to write all those paranormal books?
Well, like I used to read William Roll.
It's like a William Roll.
He's book. Like parapsychologist, yeah. And he wrote a lot of stuff. Like when I was growing up in the 70s and early 80s, like it seemed like most of his books were in the library and I was reading a bunch of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like that. It's like a compilation of cases and also kind of an overview of the phenomena and yada yada. And it came out really good. It's a big fat book, and it'll be up. The print and ebook version will be up probably next week. And then like the week after that, the audio version will probably be up because it takes them a while to go through the quality control and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's all in the can. It's just going through the final process.
Yeah. It's just all technical shit from this point on out. Mm-hmm. And also, this is a nice segue into our topic today, because the next book I'm thinking about writing, I'm thinking about doing a true crime compilation of like unsolved murders or unsolved serial murders or both.
Yeah, and I came up with a title for it that I think would be good. What was it called? I forgot the own title.
No, I remember it. Should I say?
Yeah, go ahead and say it.
Oh, you can. Yeah, it's going to be called Faceless Villains.
Faceless Villains.
Yeah, he came up with that too, with that title. I'm like, ooh, I like it.
Yeah, we were out walking and I came up with that title.
So yeah, I think I'm going to come up with that. Cause
but Jenny's memory is better than mine. I don't know. Kind of shit just automatically.
And then he forgets. I have to come write it down because otherwise I'll forget it too.
Yeah.
But the reason I mention that is because I fucking love true crime, man. And I especially love unsolved murders. Like, I don't love them because the people's dead, because that's sad, but but it's like they really get my imagination going. Yeah. Because, you know, it's so intriguing, like thinking what could have happened, like, you know, and all of them are so weird, like especially I like the weird ones with like all these weird unexplained details.
Oh, hold on though, I forgot to mention something.
What'd you forget?
Jenny's gonna go on a promotional tour online for this
when
new
the book.
Book
comes out.
We already have some stuff lined up. We have a couple of shows that we normally go on. One of them is End of Days Radio. Who else was Where Did the Road
Where Did
Go?
The Road
we'll
Go?
Be
yeah.
on that.
Yeah, that's an awesome
Well,
show.
You'll be on that one. I didn't write the book, so I won't be on it. But Jenny will be a guest on those. And as the dates come up, we're going to post notifications in both streams, both in YouTube and in
the audio
on the audio. But that way you guys can listen to her shows. Yeah. And you'll know what date they come out.
Yeah.
Some of them might be live hangouts too, because they do that sometimes also.
Every now and then, yeah. I've done a couple of those. But yeah, so that'll be upcoming. So that's all upcoming stuff. So anyway, let's go back to... Okay, now I discovered this case and I thought that I was pretty up on my creepy unsolved murder.
What's the name of this case?
Kind of shit. This is called, generally, is usually called the Mystery in Room 1046 or Horror in Room 1046. I've seen it called both things.
Okay.
And I actually stumbled across this on like a subreddit thread about true crime. And it was like the third most popular story and I had never heard of it.
I never heard of it.
Yeah. So like I went in there and started researching it and stuff like that. It turned out that like a couple, well, it was like last year or last Halloween or something like that. I think cracked.com, you know, every Halloween they do like a bunch of like a list of like creepy unsolved murders and stuff. And I think it was one of the ones in there, but you know, it was just given short shrift, I think. And, but some of the details about this case are super fucking weird and it's never been solved.
Right.
Right. So what I'm going to do, like, I wrote down, like, I laid out the timeline, and I'm just going to lay it all out. And you can, like, kind of comment on, like, these kind of weird little details and shit like that. I mean, you know.
Well, I can use my street sense.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, the guy's dead. I mean, that's, you know what I mean? but like I said, the intro, yeah, we know that. That's, right. You know, that's what happens at the end. But, but, you know, I think the interesting thing about it is, like, all the creepy little details that they never figured out. Let's set the scene. It's January 2nd, 1935, Kansas City.
1935, Kansas City.
Yes, it is. Can you picture it? Yes, you can. That's wintertime.
Okay.
Second day after the new year.
All right.
And there's a hotel called the Hotel President. This young man with dark hair, like dark brown hair, walks in the door. He doesn't have any luggage, right? And, you know, people that saw him, he was obviously young, but people kind of pegged his age as like somewhere between 20 and 35. So, you know, also he had a cauliflower ear. So people like kind of read him as maybe a boxer or just a wrestler. Ear? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he comes in, no luggage. He specifically asks for an interior room several floors up.
So he doesn't want any windows.
No windows. He signs the register, Roland T. Owen. He says he's from Los Angeles. He pays for one day. Now, the bellboy comes to take him up to the room. Now, the bellboy remembers that the main thing that the guy did was he bitched that he had stayed in another hotel the night before called the Muehlbach. And these, like, highway robbers had tried to charge him five whole fucking dollars for an interior room. Now, I know that doesn't sound like much, but in 1935, $5 was the equivalent of about $90 today. So, you know, you can see why he was bitching. But that's specifically what the bellboy remembered. He said he was just complaining about the other hotel. So they go up to, they give him a room on the 10th floor with no windows. And the bellboy sees this guy. He goes into the room. He shows him into the room. And this Roland T. Owen guy, all he takes out of his pocket is a comb and a brush and a tube of toothpaste. That's it.
All right.
And he puts him down in the bathroom.
All right.
And then he says, okay, well, I gotta go out. So the bellboy is like, okay, well, I'll walk down with you because I'm going down there too. Now, Roland leaves the door to his room unlocked. And the bellboy said, hey, do you mind if I go back and lock the door? And Owen's like, sure. So he gives him the key. The guy goes back and locks the door. And then he comes and then he sees the guy leave. Now, this was Wednesday, January 2nd. This was the morning. Now, about noon that same day, the maid comes up to clean the room. She knocks on the door and Roland answers it. She's kind of surprised because, you know, there was someone else staying in there and she'd been off the day in between. So she said, oh, I didn't know anyone was in here. You know, I'll come back later. And, you know, Roland says, no, it's all right. You can come in and clean or whatever. So she comes in to clean. And then he says, don't lock the door because I have a friend coming over in a few minutes. Now, the maid also noticed that every time she went into the room, like all the blinds were always drawn really tight and it was always super dark in there. It's like he just had like one little lamp like on by the bed and that's the only light she ever saw on in there. It was always like really dark. So she's cleaning the room and stuff. And then Roland goes into the bathroom and starts brushing his hair. And then he reminds her again, hey, leave the door unlocked because I have a friend coming. Okay. But she didn't see anybody come in. and she didn't see him leave. She finishes cleaning and she leaves. Now, 4 o'clock, she comes back to the room and she's got the towels, you know, from the laundry. She comes in. Now, the door was still unlocked and she goes in there. The room is still dark. But she sees Roland in there and he's laying across the bed, fully dressed in the dark. Okay. And evidently, he doesn't say anything to her and she doesn't say anything. She just leaves the towels. And then on the dresser, she sees a note and it says, "Don, I will be back in 15 minutes. Wait." But he was in the room and he was just laying there in the dark on the bed with all his clothes on.
Like he was getting ready to leave.
But she didn't mention that he said anything to her or anything like that. She said it was just really creepy because he was just laying there on the bed in the dark. So, like, no one hears anything that night. So the next morning, which was Thursday, January 3rd, and the same maid, she goes up to room 1046 around 1030, and she's going to clean it. Now, for some reason, she assumed that Roland was not in there. So she used her pass key to open the door. Now, the way this hotel was situated, I'm not sure, I don't know if it works this way anymore. But you can only, like, the staff can only open the door with their pass key if the door had been locked from the outside. So she opens the door with her pass key, which means that someone had locked the door from the outside, which I guess is why she assumed that Roland wasn't in there. But when she went in there, he was in there. He was just sitting there in the dark. So she's like, well, he couldn't have gone out and locked the door. Someone else must have gone out and locked the door and had the key. Because, you know, how else would it be locked? She wouldn't have been able to unlock it. So he's just sitting there in the dark. Then she hears the phone ring. So Roland picks up the phone and she hears him say, "No, Don, I don't want to eat. I'm not hungry. I just had breakfast." And then he just kept saying, "No, I'm not hungry." So then, like, Roland hangs the phone up. And then he starts, like, chatting with the maid, you know, saying, "Oh, you know, do people live in this hotel? You know, are you cleaning the entire floor? Blah, blah, blah." And then he bitched again about the hotel the night before, trying to charge him $5 for the interior room, because that shit was really sticking in his craw, evidently. He's like, "That goddamn trying to charge me $5, brah." So the maid finishes cleaning up the room, she leaves. Now, this is the same day, Thursday, 4 p.m. She comes back again from the laundry with the towels. And this is the same maid the whole time. She comes up, she knocks on the door. She hears two men talking in the room. And now a voice asks her, "Who is that?" And she said it didn't sound like Roland's voice. Mm-hmm. It was a different guy. She said, "Oh, it's just the maid. I came with the clean towels." And the voice says, "We don't need any." And tells her to go away.
Okay.
Now she knows that there's no towels in the fucking room because she took the dirty ones earlier and she's, you know, she's bringing the clean ones. She's like, "Okay, well, okay, you need no towels." Even though you do, because there's not any. Now here's like, here's something a little weird. Now later that night, about 11 p.m., there's a guy named Robert Lane, and he was driving down the street near this hotel, the hotel president that Roland was staying at. He said he was driving along the street, and he suddenly saw this guy running down the road. And he said the guy had shoes and pants on, but he just had an undershirt, like he didn't have a coat or anything. He said it was January. It wasn't freezing cold, but it was, you know, it was pretty cold. And he's running down the street in an undershirt. So the guy, like, waves Robert Lane down in the car. "Hey, hey, hey." So Robert Lane stops the car. And then he says the guy comes up to a car and then kind of looks at him like, "Oh, I thought this was a taxi." Right? Yeah. And he's like, "Can you take me to where I can get a cab?" And he, and Robert Lane is like, "Sure." Mm-hmm. He said... And then he says to the guy, he said, "I said, you look like you've been in it bad," because he looked kind of distraught and sort of beat up. He said he looked like on his forearm, there was this really long, deep cut. Now, Robert Lane said that this man said, "I'll kill that blank tomorrow." That's the newspaper put a blank. So I don't know if it was "I'll kill that fucker tomorrow." Right. "I'll kill that shithead tomorrow. I'll kill that asshat tomorrow."
So he had been in a fight.
It looked like it.
Yeah.
If this was indeed the same guy, because they're not entirely sure. But Robert Lane, you know, he lets this person get in the backseat of his car and he takes him down the street to where there's like a cab or something like that. And he says, the guy is like cupping his hands, like in a strange way, as though he had another wound somewhere else and was trying to like catch blood from it or something like that. Okay. That's what the guy said anyway. So he said, I dropped the guy off. He said, I saw the guy get out of the car. He went over to the cab and the cabbie wasn't in there. So he said, the guy goes over to the driver's side of the cab and like honks the horn of the cab, which I thought was kind of cheeky. Mm-hmm. And then Robert Lane said, oh, I saw the cabbie who was in a restaurant across the street come running out like, hey, okay, there's the fare. Now, they don't know for sure because Robert Lane only said that he saw this guy and that this guy was the same guy, Roland T. Owen, after the murder happened.
Okay.
Okay, so...
They show him a picture. He goes, yeah, it's him.
And yeah, so he said that, yeah, that's him. So they're not entirely sure, but still, because they said... You know, if the guy was like running around, like with just an undershirt and stuff like that, he's like, you'd think that the staff at the hotel would have noticed him running out of the hotel, now but this, maybe he was coming from somewhere else.
This is the question I have. He said he had a wound on his arm.
That's what he said. And he said it was a very deep cut.
Was that on the dead body?
Yes.
Okay. So, so it probably wasn't.
But like I said, you know, all they have is Robert Lane's word, like, hey, I picked that guy up the other
night. Right.
Later that night, after this car incident, evidently, there was a woman named Jean Owen, no relation, and she was staying in room 1048, which was next to 1046. And she said she told police that she heard two men and two women arguing and cursing. She wasn't sure if it was coming from 1046, but she said she knew it was on the same floor because it was really loud. Now, she said the noise went on for a while and she was going to report them, but then it stopped, so she didn't. Now, here was another thing that was kind of, like I said, there's all these like weird little details and they're not really sure like what was relevant to the case or whatever, because they don't know if all that arguing was from that room or not.
Okay.
She said she thought it was because it was really noisy and she was right next door. Now, there was an elevator operator and he worked the night shift. Now, he saw this woman. She came in the elevator and she asked to go up to the 10th floor. And the elevator operator had seen this woman before. She was a hooker, right?
Okay.
And, but she asked for room 1026. Now, there's some kind of confusion about this because when the story about the murder first went out on the wire service, they actually identified the room that Roland T. Owen had been staying in as 1026. But it was actually 1046. So they're not really sure if this hooker was asking to go to Roland's room. But she asked for 1026. Now, the elevator operator took her up to the 10th floor and she took off. Now, about 5 minutes, she came back and signaled for the elevator again. And the elevator operator said, oh, the guy I was supposed to meet isn't in his room. And I wonder why, because he's always been, you know, on time and everything like that.
So she may have had the wrong room.
So, yeah, so they're not really sure. And she said, maybe he's in a different room. Maybe he was in 1024 because I saw lights on in there. But she's like, I don't know. He's, you know, he's not in there. Hmm. So she waited around for about half an hour, about 40 minutes, they said, and up there. Now, then the elevator operator got called again to go up to the 10th floor. And she came out. And she went down and left in the lobby. And about an hour later, she came back with another dude, an unknown dude. And she went up to the 9th floor with this guy. And then about 4:15 a.m., she came out and she left the hotel. And then about 15 minutes later, the man came down and he left the hotel because he said he couldn't sleep.
Okay, now, she's in this case because she may have originally been going to see this guy.
Right. They're not sure because the room she asked for, like I said, there was confusion about which room it was initially.
Yeah.
And they thought it was weird that she had gone up to the room and she's like, oh, he's not in there and I'm not really sure what room I'm supposed to go to.
So other than that little reference, she doesn't really play a part in this.
They're not sure.
Okay.
They're not sure because these were like the only people that were kind of, that were seen, that were not really... Okay. You know, they don't really know, like, who they were or they weren't really accounted for.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Now, then it was Friday morning, 7 a.m. And then the operator in the hotel, she noticed that the phone in room 1046 was off the hook. and no one was using it, right?
And this is the one where the guy.
This was the one where the guy was staying. The phone was off the hook, and she wasn't.
How can you tell somebody just has the phone off?
Well, I guess. Well, in 1935, didn't they have the little switchboard?
There must have been a little light or something.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, because I guess they knew like when shit was off the hook, and they knew when someone wasn't using it. Maybe they could listen in. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not real familiar with phone technology from 1935. So she's kind of like, huh, that's odd. So she gave it about 10 minutes, and then it was still off the hook, and no one was using it. So she told the bellboy, she said, you know, go up there and tell him to hang that phone up. Now, the bellboy that went up there was the same bellboy who had shown Roland Owen to the room on the first day when he checked in. Now, he goes up there, and the door was locked, and there's a do not disturb sign on there. So the bellboy knocks, and no one answers. Then he knocks again, and then a voice says, come in. Except he couldn't come in because the door was locked from the inside.
Right.
So he knocks again and he's like, you know, hey, it's locked. And then the same voice said, turn on the lights. Even though he couldn't come in because the door was locked. So how could he turn the lights on? I don't know. So he just keeps knocking and knocking and then he gets no answer. And then finally he yells through the door, put the phone back on the hook. Right? So then he goes back down to the lobby and he tells the operator, you know, I don't know, the fucking guy's fucking drunk or something like that. He's like shouting at me to open the door and I can't open the door. It's locked. He's telling me to turn the lights on. I can't even get in there. So he's like, I don't fucking know. I told him to put it back on the hook. So he says, you know, wait about an hour, see if it's back on the hook. If not, we'll send someone else up there. Actually, this is a good time to pause and take a break because we're almost about the halfway point. So let's take a break right now and then we will continue this creepy fucking story. In just a few minutes. We'll be right back.
It was a time when we raced to the TV guide to see what was playing on Monster Movie Matinee that Saturday afternoon, and in some cities, that evening. It was all about werewolves, vampires, giant lizards, and those great Japanese monster movies. Relive it all every week as Jim Adams and Mark Maddox bring you Monster Attack. Monster Attack takes a look at those classic monster movies that we all grew up loving. Join us every week on Monster Attack, exclusively on the Project Entertainment Network.
Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13 o'clock for a 10% discount. Subculturecorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
The Necrocasticon. The podcast that blends horror and heavy metal properties with a common connection. Brought to you by hosts Token Tom Glock, Max Axe, Smoking Wart Hades, and Azrael Mordecai. Featuring interviews and more with the stars of metal and horror. The Necrocasticon, Mondays on Project Entertainment Network.
Hollow Earth, graphic design by Jenny Ashford. Specializing in posters and flyers. Special rates for bands and artists. Quick turnaround times. Books and CD covers. Consultations through email or Skype. Logos and packaging. Payment through PayPal. Ads and promo materials. Satisfaction guaranteed. Visit the Facebook page at Hollow Earth Design or email hecate80@hotmail.com.
Okay, we're back. So when we last left, you know, like I said, phone was off the hook. So 8:30 a.m., the operator sees the phone is still off the hook. So she sends a different bellboy. She says, go up there and tell him to put the phone back on the hook. So the second bellboy goes up there, and the door was locked, but this time he uses his passkey and the door opens, which means in the meantime, someone must have gone out and locked the door from the outside.
Okay.
Right? So this bellboy, his name was Harold Pike. First one was named Randolph something. But Harold Pike, he goes in there and he can see in the room, like there's light from the hallway and shit like that. And he says, now this time he sees Roland Owen and he's lying on the bed naked.
Okay.
And he looks drunk.
Okay.
Now the telephone stand, which had a glass top, had been knocked over. So that was why the phone was off the hook.
Okay.
So all the bellboy did, he did, you know, he's just like, oh, naked guy, drunk guy in bed. He must have knocked the thing over with his arm or whatever. So he puts it back. He puts the phone back and puts it back on its thing. So then he goes back downstairs and he tells the supervisor, oh, the fucking dude's drunk up there. He just knocked it over. I fixed it. Okay. So then around 10:30, 10:45, operator sees that the phone is off the hook again, right?
Mm-hmm.
After the guy went up there and fixed it and saw the guy sit laying there naked. So the first bellboy, Randolph, he goes up there and he sees the do not disturb sign is on the thing.
On the door?
On the door.
Okay.
So he knocks, gets no answer. So he unlocks it with his passkey.
The do not disturb sign was not there before. It got put up there. So he's still alive. He's sleeping on the bed.
Yeah.
Even if they put do not disturb on it.
Yeah.
Or either him or someone else.
Well, see, that's the thing. It must have been someone else because the door was locked from the outside.
Right.
So someone had the key and came out and locked it.
Right.
Because you can't, I guess you can't do that. Like all the reports say you can't.
Okay.
So this time Randolph goes up. He sees the do not disturb sign. He knocks. There's no answer. He unlocks the door with his pass key, meaning it was locked from the outside. Now, when he goes in this time, this was his statement to police. He said, when I entered the room, this man was within 2 feet of the door on his knees and elbows, holding his head in his hands. I noticed blood on his head. I turned the light on, placed the telephone receiver on the hook. I looked around and saw blood on the walls and in the bathroom.
What man? Just a man?
Yeah, the man in the room.
Okay, all right.
The man in the room. He said, yeah, he saw blood all over the walls and the guy was on the floor with his head in his hands and there was blood on his head.
All right.
So the bellboy, you know, runs downstairs, gets his supervisor, gets all this other stuff. So all of the supervisors, the manager and everything like that, they run back up to the room. Now this time they try to open the door and they can only open it about 6 inches because Roland Owen has fallen in front of the door.
Okay.
So, you know, they call the cops, they call a doctor, they call or an ambulance or whatever. So they all come up there. Now, the guy, Roland T. Owen, is still alive.
Mm-hmm.
However, he has been restrained with cords. There's a rope around his neck, around his wrists, and around his ankles. He looked like he had been tortured.
Mm-hmm.
There were several knife wounds above his heart. One of these knife wounds punctured his lung. He had also been beat on the head a bunch of times. It was like a big wound. There was also bruising on his neck, you know, so probably someone had tried to strangle him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they said the room was just spattered with blood. There was blood everywhere. It was just on the furniture. It was on the ceiling. It was all over the place, which is weird because the first bellboy that went up there hadn't noticed that.
Right.
He just noticed the guy laying there naked. He hadn't noticed blood all over the walls. So the doctor is there and he cuts the cords like off Owen's wrists and stuff like that. And now Owen is still conscious, but just barely. They ask him, who did this to you? And he says, nobody.
Nobody.
Right?
Okay.
So they asked him, well, how did this happen? And he said, I fell against the bathtub.
Okay.
That was his excuse. Like he was tied up and beaten.
Covered for somebody.
Yeah. So he said, I fell against the bathtub. They asked him if he tried to kill himself, which seemed like a dumb question because how the fuck could you
tie yourself up
and shit like that? And he said no. And then he started to go unconscious. They put him in an ambulance and they take him to the hospital. However, on the way to the hospital, he shuffled off his mortal coil.
He died. All right.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the doctor thought that because of the blood in the room, that the blood had been there for 6 or 7 hours because it had solidified, like, mm-hmm. on the walls and on his body and was stuff like that. Evidently it was. Okay. I mean, like I said, it's 1935. So this to me seems very weird because, like I said, the first bellboy that went up there about the phone, mm-hmm. I mean, presumably he was right next to the bed because he righted the phone stand and put the phone back on it. And he said, yeah, the guy was laying there naked, but he didn't say I saw blood splattered everywhere, right. Unless it was so fucking dark in there that he couldn't see anything.
Right.
So that seemed a little weird, but they said that the blood was all dried and solidified. So it must have been there for 6 to 7 hours, so the doctor said. Now, another weird thing, they said, okay, so then the cops are searching the hotel room. And here's where it gets a little strange.
It's not strange up until now?
Yeah, but okay, I mean, well, right. It gets stranger.
All right.
Stranger.
Okay.
The whole case is fucking strange. And I can't, and like, I write horror for a living and I love true crime. And I try to figure shit out. I have not been able to figure this shit out. This is fucking, because like I said, now it's getting even weirder. So the cops search the room. All they find, okay, first of all, they find no clothes. And if you'll recall, when he checked into the hotel, he had clothes on.
Okay.
They find no clothes, no shoes, no underwear, no overcoat, no nothing.
Whoever killed him took him, of course.
I guess, yeah, no clothes. Yeah. All they found in the room, they found a label from a necktie, which I don't know if he had been wearing a tie at the beginning. They found a hairpin, a safety pin, an unlighted cigarette, and a small unused bottle of dilute sulfuric acid.
What the hell is that for?
Who knows? But it wasn't used. I should also mention that aside from all his clothes being gone, someone had also stolen everything from the hotel room, including all the soap, the shampoo, the towels, everything. There were no weapons in the room. There was nothing, right? So the only things left in the room that the hotel provided were 2 water glasses.
Okay.
They were glass. They said one was still in the bathroom on the shelf. The other one was in the sink, broken, like with a shard of it missing.
Okay.
I don't know if they ever found the shard or not. Now, on the telephone stand, which had a glass top, as I mentioned before, they were able to get 4 fingerprints. But they were small, so they're thinking they belong to a woman.
Okay.
So they don't know if this person was the killer, if this was the hooker,
right?
If this was some other woman that no one saw. Who knows? But they're presuming that they're woman's fingerprints because they were small. Yeah, so anyway.
It could have been there from a long time
ago. Yeah, it might not have been. Shit, it could have been the fucking bellboys from when he picked because he picked the telephone stand up and, you know, maybe he was a young guy and he had small hands. I don't know. So anyway, I said that he died on the way to the hospital. He actually got to the hospital and then he went into a coma and then he died. But, you know, he's dead anyway. Then over the evening, they start trying to identify this guy. Now, the first thing they discover is that clearly Roland T. Owen is not his real name because he says he's from Los Angeles and they can find no record of a Roland T. Owen from Los Angeles, right? Now, so they take the guy. So the guy is now a John Doe. He's unidentified. So they take him to a funeral home and they put him on display and they tell people, you know, they put out a thing in the paper or whatever, or on the radio to come and try and identify this dude. Cause now they have no idea who the fuck he is.
Right.
Now, one of the people that came to identify the body, as I mentioned earlier, was Robert Lane, the guy that said he had picked him up with the cut on his arm. And for some reason, the cops they thought, oh, that wasn't the same dude. Even though Robert Lane came and said, yeah, that's the guy. And yeah, there's that cut on his arm that I saw. So I don't know why the cops thought that it wasn't the same dude, or I don't know. It doesn't really say. you know, all these people come and some people are like, oh yeah, that's my cousin or something like that. But you know, it's, they didn't really identify him. And they had, they put it out in the wire services. They took a picture of him, in the funeral home, and they put it out on the wire services and asked people to come forward if they recognized him. Now, about the only things they could determine, some people had seen him, in a couple of bars around the hotel in the company of two women. They went to the Muhlenbach Hotel, where he had bitched about having to pay $5 for an interior room. And they went there and they showed the picture to the people that worked there. And the people that worked there said, yeah, that guy stayed here, but Roland T. Owen wasn't his name. He registered under the name Eugene K. Scott. And he said he was from Los Angeles. So they ran that name. And there was no one named Eugene K. Scott from Los Angeles in Los Angeles either. So that clearly was not his name either. So then they, like later on, several days, people came in, people were trying to identify him and shit like that. Now, on January 12th, there's a guy named Tony Bernardi, and he was a wrestling promoter. And he came in and he said, this guy came into my wrestling establishment, whatever. And he said a couple weeks ago, and he said that he wanted to get in some wrestling matches. Cause like I said, he had that ear. So people thought maybe he was a fighter, like a boxer or something like that. Now, this wrestling promoter said that this man's name was Cecil Werner. And he said, this guy told him he wrestled for some other guy in Omaha named Charles Locke. So they check with Charles Locke. They show him pictures of the dude and stuff like that. Charles Locke of Omaha has no idea who this fucking dude is.
All right.
Late, so time goes on and, you know, no one can identify the dude. They have no idea who he is. They have three different names for this dude and none of them match up. No one recognizes him that comes there. It's like they have no fucking idea. So finally, March 3rd, and they're like, well, finally, we're just going to bury this dude. And since he was a John Doe, they were going to bury him in, you know, the Potter's Field, where they bury unidentified people. But then the funeral home gets an anonymous phone call. And the caller says, don't bury him in the Potter's Field. We're going to send you enough money to cover the burial and the funeral. Right? So then on March 23rd, the funeral home gets a special delivery envelope. And inside it is a bunch of money wrapped in newspaper.
That's the killer that sent that.
Yeah. And it was enough to pay for the funeral and the burial.
All right. I'm getting an idea.
So... Wait, I'm not done yet.
All right.
Okay, so so the funeral home, obviously thinking this is a little weird, they call the police. But they had the funeral, they had the burial, they buried him in Memorial Park Cemetery. Now, I don't know what name they buried him under, because they don't know what his fucking name is. Like, a couple days later, an unidentified woman called the newspaper, and she said... Roland Owen was not buried in the Potter's Field. Call the undertakers and the florists, and you'll learn that Mr. Owen's funeral expenses were paid and that a floral tribute was placed on his grave. Now, this floral tribute, see, the same shit happened. An anonymous caller calls the Rock Flower Company, and they sent enough money to buy a bouquet of 13 red roses.
Right.
And they wanted these roses to say, love forever, Louise.
Okay.
They have no idea who Louise is.
Well, right? that's just the name that was on it.
Right. I'm just saying.
It might be Louis.
No, it was Louise.
I know, but it might have been a dude named Louis.
Yeah.
I'm thinking this is
giving him a girl's name.
I'm thinking his boyfriend killed him.
So when they had the funeral, I mean, obviously the cops thought, oh, maybe the killer will show up or something like that. So the cops staked it out. Unfortunately, nobody came to the funeral except the cops.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, they start looking for, they're looking for Don. They're looking for Louise. They have no idea who the fuck any of these people are.
Right.
Now, eventually they did identify the dude, they think. What ended up happening was, about a year and a half later, there had been kind of an expose of the case. You all right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know. There had been kind of an expose of the case published in the American Weekly. It was a magazine. And this woman happened to see the story like about a year and a half after it had been published. And she sees the picture in there and she said, God, you know, that looks just like my friend's son who's been missing. Right? So she sends the magazine to the woman and the woman sees the thing and she's like, yeah, that's my son. He's been missing. He was from Birmingham, Alabama. And the weird thing, now she identified him as her son. Now he has like the most 1935 name ever. Artemus Ogletree. That was his name, evidently, according to his mother. And she said that he was only 17 years old. Now, she said that he had taken off, like, to, you know, wander the country or whatever it is 17-year-old boys were doing in 1935. And she had been trying to find him since. She had even, like, contacted J. Edgar Hoover and all this other. She had heard that he'd gone to Cairo and married somebody, and she couldn't find him, right? And so, but she said the weird thing was that she had received three short typewritten letters that were supposedly from him.
Right.
But she said even before, and she got these after he was already dead. Like, she didn't know he was dead. And she said even before she knew he was dead, that they probably weren't from him. She said, one, because he didn't know how to type.
Right.
And two, she said, it just didn't sound like him. They were just kind of like, oh, I'm doing fine, blah, blah, blah. And all she said, it just didn't sound like him, right? So, but evidently they said that's who it was. It's Artemus Ogletree. However, that's about all, like, all they found out after that was that.
No wonder he's given aliases with a name like Artemus Ogletree.
What are you talking about? That's a fucking rad name.
No, that's
He sounds like a supervillain. He may have been, I don't know. But the only thing they found out, like, after that, and like I said, they're assuming his mom identified him, so they assumed that's really who this dude was, Artemus Ogletree, right? 17 years old. And they found out that he had also stayed, while he was in Kansas City, presumably a few days before he died, he had stayed at this other hotel called the St. Regis. And when he checked in there, he was with another dude. So they don't know if that was Don, the guy he was talking to on the phone, or if it was some other dude, or what. Now, that's all they know. That's it. They have no idea who fucking killed this person. They have no idea why they killed the person. Why?
So I got a pretty good idea.
So the only thing, the only coda to this was sometime in the 2000s, somebody that worked in a library in Missouri, and they had the records for this case, right? And they got a phone call from out of state. And this person on the other end of the phone said that they were going through an elderly relative's stuff, you know, that after they had died. And they said they found this box and it had, all of these newspaper articles about this case. And they said, and in the box also, there was an object, quote unquote, that had been mentioned in the papers at the time, but then they didn't tell the person at the library what the object was. So that's like, what the fuck, man? Okay.
Maybe it was the missing shard of glass.
I was just going to say that exact same thing. Yeah, because it didn't really say, it said one of the glasses had a shard missing, but they didn't say they found the shard.
Right.
They said, like I said, all they found in the room was the fucking label off a tie, a safety pin, a hairpin, an unlighted cigarette, and that weird bottle of sulfuric acid, which had not been used.
Right.
So it's like, did they like bring it to the room? Like they were going to use it and then they didn't get around to it?
Is that it? Is that the whole
thing? That's like pretty much the whole case.
This is what I think.
All right. So like I said, many mysteries. Right. One, we pretty much are sure who this guy is. 17-year-old kid. He's probably from Birmingham, Alabama. If he is who his mother says he is.
If
that's him. Okay. So like I said, who killed this person? Why?
His boyfriend killed him.
Well, okay. But the weird thing is that nobody really saw anybody going in and out.
He must have been hiding underneath the bed or in the bathroom.
Maybe.
He was in that room. He kept leaving. Yeah.
Because somebody kept leaving.
They got into a fight and he killed him. And then he regretted it later and then had him buried, you know. Didn't want him buried in the
Potter's Field. Well, because he must have been.
I think he ran away from home when he was about 17 because he was gay. So he goes on the. Yeah, back in 1935. That's why he wanted a room. Interior, so there's no windows, so no one can see what's going on. It's him and this guy. He doesn't have a job. Where's the money coming from? You know what I mean? Somebody was taking care of him.
That's what I'm kind of wondering about. Like, I don't want to besmirch the memory of a dead person. But, you know, probably most of his family members are dead by now. But I kind of have to think that he might have been a gigolo.
Well, that could be, too.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Because, well, here's the thing. Now,
the hotels would have said, no, there were guys coming and going all night long from his room.
Right. And here's another weird thing now. Like, the maid that kept going up and bringing him towels and cleaning his room and stuff, she said that when she first saw him, and every time she saw him, she's like, he was always sitting in the dark. She's like, and even though he talked to her sometimes, she said he always looked kind of worried. But the thing is, how worried could he have been if he kept leaving the fucking door unlocked?
He's waiting for his boyfriend to come.
And he even told the maid, don't lock the door, like someone's coming. So it wasn't like he was afraid someone was going to come and kill him, right?
His boyfriend was a psycho. He was an abused man.
You think?
Yeah, something like that.
Like, why? I don't know.
I don't think it was anything, you know, it's an interesting case, but I don't think it was anything, you know, bizarre. You know, had you seen it go down, it would have been mundane.
We'll see, but that's what I was telling you the other day. That's true of every unsolved murder.
Right.
But the intriguing thing is that you weren't there.
Right.
And all you know is like all these like weird little details at the end.
Right.
And you have no idea like why any, I mean, like I said, this isn't kind of, I don't think this is kind of the case where, cause you know how we did the show? We did the show on Somerton Man and Isdal Woman.
Yeah.
And those two murders, I think they were probably secret agents, right? Because that was some weird, like Cold War type of shit, type of shit. This guy, I don't know. Like, it seems like I said, it seems like he must have been involved in something kind of seedy.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he ran away from home. Like I said, maybe it was kind of like, you know, what the fuck is that? Drugstore Cowboy or whatever. Fuck is that?
Midnight Cowboy.
That's a different movie. Midnight Cowboy. It might be a situation like that where he's like, well, I'm going to leave Alabama.
Maybe his boyfriend was his pimp.
Right. So maybe it was something like that. Yeah. But like, why? I don't know. So, one, why would they torture him?
Well, no, they just said it looked like that. Maybe he might have been trying to get to leave. So he tied him up, you know, just kind of a lover's quarrel. Might have been another wrestler that he was messing around with.
Well, and what about, they said,
wrestling. You know how it is. You take the shirt off or whatever. We wrestle each other. You know how it is.
Yeah, you know how it is.
It's all good.
Well, and also, like he was apparently seen in some bars with two women.
Yeah.
And the woman in the neighboring room said that she heard arguing. It was two men and two women, she said, it sounded like. But nobody saw these
women. Maybe the women tried to rescue him.
Maybe. The only other woman that anybody saw, like any of the hotel staff saw, was the hooker.
Right.
And that was one woman.
Right.
And she was a hooker because, like I said, the staff had seen her around before. Yeah. And like after she went up to the 10th floor and said, oh, I don't know where that dude is.
Yeah.
And then she went out and then she came back with a different dude and went into a different floor.
I can't answer it, Jenny. I don't know.
You don't have any, like, you don't have any speculation?
I just speculated.
You speculated?
I think the dude's boyfriend killed him.
Okay, well, so lay it out. What do you think exactly happened? Was Don his boyfriend?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
He was
abusive, you know what I mean? And he was coming and going all the time, you know? And then when people were knocking on the doors, he'd hide underneath the bed. You had the hookers trying to rescue him, getting him out of this abusive relationship. They wouldn't try to rescue him. It's going to be something like that.
Then they started fighting
and he broke a glass and took the glass shard and cut on him a little bit with it. Something like that. I don't know. You know, I'm not a detective.
It's kind of odd though that if he was indeed being tortured in there.
It was, whoever killed him knew him.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But whoever.
It was probably Don.
Yeah. And like I said, they never did find Don.
No.
They never did, like, figure out who Louise was.
No.
They never did figure out who these people were calling.
I think Louise was Don. I think it was, he just couldn't write Don. Hey, you know. He couldn't write
the infamous Don.
Yeah.
That he'd been talking to on the phone.
Maybe that was his cover name. When he would dress and drag, he'd call himself Louise.
Holy crap. You've just, like, made a whole fucking.
Maybe.
But no, for real. They should make a movie out of this. I think. Like I said, the weirdest details to me are, one, that everything was gone in the room. They took all his shit. They not only took all his shit, but they took all the hotel shit, too. They took all the soap and everything.
You said shit like five times.
Did I?
Yeah, like in 30 seconds. You had these people complaining, all this extra swearing. It's like, you know, no, there's swearing or not swearing. There's never extra swearing. Swearing
is I use precisely much swearing as is necessary.
It says right there in our commercial, this show is rated R. If you're offended by, you know, common vernacular and swearing, you don't need to be listening to us.
Well, that's true because I can't I have a hard time talking without swearing.
We're not going to get into a time machine and go back to 1955 where no one sweared. Go back, go watch television. That's the deal.
Leave it to Beaver.
I know. I can't talk about it anymore.
You can't talk about it anymore? No. All right. Okay. So. Well, if you guys have
ideas. It is a
weird
case, but I, you know.
I think he's a gigolo.
I think he's just some dude's boyfriend.
I think he's a gigolo. Okay. Because like I said, what if, they don't know if this was the same guy. Like they don't know if he was staying with the same guy at the St. Regis. They don't know if that was Don or not. Might have been a different dude.
You're never going to know. You're never going to know. That's why it's unsolved.
I know. Yeah. Well, I know. But that's why it's so intriguing because we're never going to know. No. But like I said, they did find out later on who it was. Artemis Ogletree.
No, that was never really decided either. Remember, they said maybe. They didn't have the body. She didn't ID the body.
Yeah, she just ID'd it from a picture.
Right.
But yeah. So if you guys have any ideas, because I'm kind of curious to see if anybody has any ideas about what the fuck this could be all about. Mm-hmm. Oh, I swore again. Oops.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, I did. Then let us know in the comments or email me or whatever. I don't care. Okay. And, you know, tell me to figure it out. Because I think I might put this in my upcoming book. My true crime book.
And how many of these can you put into a book?
I don't know. A bunch of them? A shit ton.
Okay.
I'm sure I'll find like tons of different ones. And if like I said, this one kind of interested me because like I said, it was like one of the most popular ones on that particular subreddit and I had never heard of it. Yeah. And then I started reading it. And I'm like, how the fuck did I never hear about this? and like I said, it was in like a Cracked article.
Mm-hmm.
And this same Cracked article also had this great fucking story. Mm-hmm. Well, not great, but you know, mm-hmm. It had this great fucking story about a pretty recent, I guess it was a murder, like in Pennsylvania, this little boy coming off a school bus mm-hmm. and he found a severed head that had little rubber bouncy balls in the eye sockets.
Yeah. And they never ID'd it.
No. Also, yeah, it was an old woman's head and the head had been embalmed.
Yeah. You told me about that. I think that was a medical cadaver.
Maybe it fell off a truck.
Nobody was looking for it.
Yeah. Like the funny thing.
I don't think it fell off a truck. I think the students stole it.
And we're like, let's put bouncy balls in.
And he just had the head. He stole the head off of this medical cadaver.
Because, you know, that's a thing that
they threw it. He got drunk and threw it out the window of a car. Or something.
That's like that urban legend about those medical students that like stole an arm off a cadaver mm-hmm. and then they went through like a toll booth and then they used the cadaver arm to like hand the money. Oh, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's an urban legend. But we're getting to the end of the show. So at the end of the show, as usual, we like to remind everybody to go to the Project Entertainment Network Patreon, which is patreon.com/projectentnet and give them a couple of bucks. Also, if you like our show, then go to our Facebook page and like us. Go follow us on Twitter at, what the fuck is the name of our show? Oh yeah, like 13 O'Clock Podcast.
Go buy some cool shirts.
Go buy some shirts. I've got those shirts too. Yeah. And, also, you know, subscribe to our YouTube channel and all that good stuff. And that'll do it for this episode, the scary horror in room 1046. Somebody figure it out, goddammit, because it's bugging me. And that'll do it. Oh, musical interlude. Okay, well, I'll let it be a surprise.
Yeah.
Okay. So that'll do it for this week's show.
Something about a hotel.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not.
Okay.
Okay.
I know what it is.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Yes, it is.
No, you don't. Okay. All right. See you guys next week. Bye.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.